Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Conflicted young Jews. I'm Gordon Deal with Nicole Murray. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
The widespread protests on college campuses over the war between Israel and Hamas have some students asking intense questions of themselves.
On the tech front, experts don't love the AI from Meta so far. Hear how it's created confusion on platforms like Facebook and Instagram.
A single mom in New York is defying the odds. She passed the bar exam on the first try after being in prison on gang-related charges.
And how one cruise line goes the extra mile to get fresh fish to its restaurants at sea.
At least 75% of Holland America passengers order fresh fish once, if not twice, per cruise, so they certainly have seen demand for it. And having that fresh fish, I think, is something that people might see and be more even inclined to order it then.
Nathan Diller at USA Today peels back the layers on the fresh fish program at Holland America. Well, for college students that are Jewish, this is a moment of intense and sometimes conflicting emotions as many college campuses erupt in loud protest against Israel's conduct in the war and, in some cases, its existence, all while the deadly war in Gaza presses on and Israeli hostages remain in captivity. It's a story by Laura Meckler, national education writer at The Washington Post. Laura, what have you found?
Well, we really found that there's a wide range of Jewish experiences right now and that this is a very difficult time for Jewish students. There are some Jewish students who are with the protesters. They are actually feel that their Jewish values call them to condemn the actions that Israel has been taking in Gaza. We also had other Jewish students who feel a real sense of fear. They feel that the protests have turned straight up anti-Semitic. They have experienced calls and chants and even actions, vandalism and graffiti that are in some cases deeply anti-Semitic, and they feel personally threatened by that. So they have a sense of anger and a sense of fear. And then there are a lot of Jewish students who have feeling like there's no nuance left in this debate, but that's where they are. They feel like there is just so many conflicting emotions. For instance, they may very much support the state of Israel and want there to be a Jewish state, and yet be very angry with how Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, is carrying out this war. They may feel sort of an affinity with some of the goals of the protesters, but yet real anger and sadness and even fear associated with some of the things that they're saying and doing. So you have, and for those students in particular, this is a really difficult time because they are pulled in so many different directions. But really, it has been hard for a lot of different, a lot of students who have like a lot of views that are kind of all over the board.
You spoke to this Barnard College student in New York. I think her name is Dahlia Susan. What is she going through?
You know, she's a good example of one of these people who is sort of in this messy middle of the situation and having a really hard time. You know, she's not somebody who's like loves what Benjamin Netanyahu is doing. She wants this bombing to stop. And yet at the same time, she sees anti-Semitism on campus at Columbia. She goes to Barnard, which of course is right next to Columbia. And she has seen anti-Semitism on campus and she really wants to call out that as well. And we wrote about a particular incident that happened. She's a resident assistant in the dorms there, and she's part of a union of other RAs, and the union itself was trying to figure out what sort of statements it wanted to put out, and it put out a statement condemning the arrests on campus. More than a week ago, there were arrests on campus, and the union took a stand against that, and she wanted the union to take a stand also against the anti-Semitism that was coming from some in the protests. Mm-hmm. And there was resistance to that, and that was really upsetting to her. So, you know, she was being pulled in so many different directions.
Wow. We're speaking with Laura Meckler, national education writer at The Washington Post. The story is called For Jewish Students, Protests Stir Fear, Anger, Hope, and Questions. So you said there are profound questions these days about what it means to be a young Jew in America. Like what?
Well, what does that mean for your relationship with Israel? Well, how do you feel about what they're doing? And if you're very critical of that, how does that square with you, with perhaps what you've been raised with, which is a sense that the Jewish state is an important place, you know, given the long, long history, centuries of anti-Semitism that the Jewish people have faced, you know, they a lot of people feel very strongly about the need for a strong Israel and an Israel that has been attacked many times over the years. And yet at the same time, questions about what the behavior of Israel is today. So that would be one example of a really difficult question that it stirs. Another thing is, you know, when somebody calls out, say, Zionists on campus, what does that mean? Is that another way of saying that you're against Jews? Is that another way of saying that you're against anybody who supports Israel? Is that just a way of saying that you're opposed to the particular actions that are happening right now? You know, there's a lot of questions that all of this debate stirs.
All right, Alyssa Hochhauser. I just reminded myself. Yep, University of Pittsburgh, another student you talked to. I think she's with Chabad. What does she say?
Yeah, my colleague spoke with her, and what she said was that she feels like there is out-and-out anti-Semitism on her campus. For instance, she saw that there was a rule sign at the encampment there that said one of the rules was don't talk to Zionists. She was like, well, what does that mean? You're not going to speak to anybody who supports the existence of the State of Israel? She said that somebody inside the encampment told a friend of hers to, quote, go back to Europe. So something like that is clearly anti-Semitic. So she also just feels very frustrated, feeling like people make assumptions about what she as a Jewish person might want, or that they want Palestinians to die, which she says is not true. She says she wants peace, just like anybody else. But she said that it's very scary for her.
Thanks, Laura. Laura Meckler, national education writer at The Washington Post. Coming up next, avoiding a politically polarized workplace.
Pure opportunity. It's what Michigan is all about. The opportunity to do more. The opportunity for all businesses to reach their full potential. Visit MichiganBusiness.org/radio to discover all the ways the MEDC is helping Michigan thrive.
This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built in Michigan. Discover how the Michigan Economic Development Corporation can help your business thrive at MichiganBusiness.org/radio. How do you handle polarizing headlines that might divide your workplace? A leadership expert says you need the ability to have dialogue about hard things without burning emotional capital. We're joined by Greg Slavor, president of Westwood International, a business consulting firm. Greg, explain.
It's difficult because not only are people in opposing views and have a lot of divisions, but they're also looking more and more to find their tribe and where they belong. So these can be even more polarizing than usual.
Do you find that this breaks down by age at times?
Well, it can break down by age in the sense that the generation that's coming into the workforce has different topics and issues that they're focused on from a broad stroke perspective than the older generations. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, it can be and can make a difference.
So I thought to a certain extent, maybe I'm of that older generation where it's, you know, you're hired to do this job, shut your mouth and grind. Where the younger mm-hmm. generation was simply not brought up that way.
Exactly. And it's fascinating now because I'm even finding, like I coach and mentor people all across the spectrum. I've had some young people come to me recently and saying, I'm looking for a new job. And I'll say, what happened? And they'll say, well, I didn't believe in the cause or the way my company was going.
Wow.
So I quit. And I'll say, well, where's you don't have another job? And they'll be, no. Now, that would have never happened with an older generation. You don't quit until you have another job to take care of your livelihood or family, et cetera. Mm-hmm. This generation coming in, it's so important to them that they'll quit even without a backup.
So given the nature of some of the polarizing stories and or headlines that may make their way into our conversations, as the leader of a company, are you calling a meeting to discuss it? Do you issue a memo that addresses etiquette or civility? What do you recommend?
Yeah, so I would recommend first not, if you can help it, even talking about what side or position of the issue a person takes or a company takes. The key is the process. It's much more important for us to focus on how we deal with each other than what we tell each other. Because even in a company, even if the political or the environmental or the planetary issues divide us, our ability to handle those and even handle conflicts within our company, the way we handle things is much more important than what our positions are. And so if I were a leader or if I were suggesting to a company, I would talk about creating forums, conversations, and important questions that help people deal with the process of dealing with difficulty, not the difficulty itself, per se.
Hmm. We're speaking with Greg Zlavor. He is the president of Westwood International, a business consultancy, and we're talking about keeping polarizing headlines from dividing your office. So what about that, say, younger person who feels like perhaps he or she is the only one who feels a certain way and maybe isolated at the office? What do you recommend in that person's case?
Well, there's two things. One, I think the person who feels like they're isolated has to make an informed decision, a mature decision. Is this just difficult or is it injurious? And if it's difficult, it's an opportunity for them or for that person to begin to learn how to deal with differences, rejection, and tension in a healthy way. Because a person in the workforce is never going to be able to get away from that. Hmm. If it's injurious, i.e., they're being looked over for positions, or they're emotionally suffering because of it, then it's something to find, first of all, someone within the organization that they can lean on and get help with. To find that path either through HR, through their own boss or someone else that they can have as a sounding board. And then hopefully third, not have to escalate it any further with any other people or policies.
What's your point here in the notes about emotional capital?
Yeah, so I've noticed in a lot of organizations that people are burning their emotional capital on items that really don't matter. And emotional capital is so critical in an organization, especially for an individual, because their ability to build relationships and have goodwill, have trust, and have candid, open conversations is critical for them getting things done, having influence, making an impact. If they burn that up on small issues, trivial issues, issues outside of the company, it diminishes their ability to have impact or influence within the organization.
Thanks, Greg. Greg Zlavor, president of Westwood International. Coming up next, the word that annoys everyone at work. Hey, it's Gordon Deal, and if you're tired of eating the same meal, do what I did and try Factor. Factor brings you chef-crafted gourmet meals ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from over 35 weekly menu options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Factor's ready-to-eat meals mean no prep and no mess, using the most premium ingredients like truffle butter, shrimp, asparagus, broccolini, and filet mignon. Customize your plans to fit your life. Pause or adjust deliveries anytime. Head to factormeals.com/deal50 and use code DEAL50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. Plus, look for the badge to find your favorite low-carbon footprint meals. Again, code DEAL50 at factormeals.com/DEAL50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Factormeals.com/DEAL50 with code DEAL50. Factormeals.com/DEAL50. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. There's apparently a single word being used at the office to get your attention that's driving people crazy, and it's the word, hey. And when there's no follow-up information, it's called hey hanging. Here's this weekend's Nicole Murray.
Here to discuss the most dreaded word at work, hey, is Wall Street Journal reporter Anne Marie Chaker. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, so tell me, what is this called? What's going on with this three-letter word?
So if you've ever gotten a Slack message from a boss or a colleague that says just, hey, and no other information, you know what I'm talking about. So you'll get like a hey or a hi, and then your heart kind of drops because there's no other information, and you're left there wondering, like, am I in trouble? So this is a phenomenon that's increasingly being called hey hanging, and it's driving people nuts at work.
Oh, my. Okay. Why? I know you've gone into this a little bit, but how does using digital platforms contribute to this?
So increasingly, we have Slack and Google Chat, and it's kind of like, if you think of those forums as kind of like almost the filet mignon of workplace communication, like email is too slow, we don't want to call, but it's really easy just to, like, you know, quickly message someone, and you want to have that real time back and forth. So the easiest way is to just send a quick, hey, and to see if that person is, you know, there and seated and ready to engage. So as this, you know, method of communication grows more and more, people are, you know, Microsoft, I think, says its heaviest users now send and receive about 150 chats a day. So even though it's less than email, emails are at 250, it's still gaining. Slack and instant messaging is increasingly the way that people want to communicate at work.
How would you recommend employees respond, or if at all?
That's a tough one. Some people favor the just wait until, you know, there's more information, like do a little kind of passive-aggressive gamesmanship. Some people will just, hey, right back, and then a little kind of prod, like, what's up? Or you can just kind of play their game and just, hey, right back, and see what they come up with. It's a tough one.
Are experts suggesting that bosses maybe avoid this tactic altogether?
Yes. So a psychoanalyst that I talked to actually gave me a personality test, different categories of personality, and said that those who are on the more neurotic end of the spectrum have the hardest time with this, because they immediately jump to the, oh my God, like, it's the end of the world conclusion. I'm fired, or I'm in big bad trouble.
Right.
So I guess, you know, it would be wise, I think, for employers to just be a little bit more cognizant of people's, you know, feelings. And if at all possible, like, there's a friendly way to provide a little bit more information from the outset, I think.
If this hanging gives someone a lot of anxiety, do experts suggest that they confront their boss about the communication style?
Totally. There's a way, there's a nice way you can say, if it really bothers you and if your boss is doing it a lot, I think, you know, there's a way to tell your boss nicely that, you know, hey, this mode of communication doesn't really work for me. Can you just provide a little bit more communication on the outset so I don't, like, have a heart attack?
That's this weekend's Nicole Murray with Wall Street Journal reporter Anne Marie Chaker. Coming up next, when AI makes social media confusing. As a business owner, you have necessary expenses, but some quick math might reveal that you're spending on items that are narrowing your profit margin. Get a smarter business plan with NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system. You have access to accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR all in one platform. With NetSuite, everything can be accessed in the cloud from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and you improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math and see how your company can benefit from NetSuite. Visit netsuite.com/Gordon. NetSuite has proven ways to cut costs and boost performance. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. netsuite.com/Gordon. That's netsuite.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend here, first full weekend of May. Gordon Deal with Nicole Murray. Coming up this half hour, AI, perhaps not ready for prime time yet. Also, half birthday parties for adults, and the New York City woman who defied the odds. Her story in about 20 minutes. Well, if Meta AI is supposed to be improving our user experience with the likes of Facebook, Instagram, and Messenger, it appears so far to be missing the mark. Here's tech analyst Rob Enderle at the Enderle Group. Rob, your take.
Well, so what's kind of interesting, and has always been interesting with regard to Facebook, is Facebook should know more about the people that use it than anybody else. They capture an incredible amount of information on your interests, your likes, what you don't like. And yet, there's really nothing about the service that indicates that they learn anything about that information. And this is a case in point. They've applied AI to a number of their services, and it doesn't appear to be smart. I mean, it's very much like, even though you might have been using Facebook for years, maybe even a decade or more, the that the AI knows absolutely nothing about you. And so it's putting forth stuff you're not interested in. It's serving up ads you don't care about. It's for a service that should be incredibly capable of, you know, marketing to you, giving you content that you're going to like and you're going to love. It just doesn't do that. And their AI implementation apparently is the same thing. It is annoying people. It isn't making the service more attractive or even making the sales aspect, the advertising aspect of the service, which is how they make their money, more effective. I'm just scratching my head about how bad the implementation is, given it should be one of the best implementations out there. And it's not like Zuckerberg isn't technical, and it's not like Facebook doesn't understand AI either. They're one of the companies that's kind of trying to drive this particular initiative. But it really feels like they're all hat, no cattle, that they're able to talk the talk, but they're not able to walk the walk.
And then I sit on Instagram, I think, or I go on Instagram and I want to search something like, you know, Barstool Sports or something, like it asks, like, can, you know, ask Meta AI anything, right? And that's
right. It kind of, for those folks that just are kind of used to searching the old way and don't necessarily want to go through an AI interface, it just gets in their way and makes the search process more aggravating. I mean, in theory, what AI should do for those that know what they're doing is make people even more efficient. And for those people that don't know what they're doing, it should be able to make them much more like those that are more capable. Instead, for those that don't know what they're doing, it's not proving to be much help. And for those that do know what they're doing, it's become an impediment, not an assistant. It's like they've done everything backwards.
We're speaking with Rob Enderle. He's the founder and principal analyst at the Enderle Group. And we're talking about Meta AI. It's supposed to improve the user experience, but apparently it's not. And then on top of that, like so much of the stuff that appears on social media these days is like AI generated. Like it can be a confusing time.
Yeah, there are a lot of complaints in that article about the fact that you're getting a lot of AI-generated stuff. And recognize that saw another article the other day, a lot of the stuff we're getting is actually being generated out of Russia. And it's designed to get us aggravated and upset. Russia's now being highlighted as one of the entities that are driving the riots we're now seeing on college campuses. And as a distraction from their war in Ukraine and in the hope, I think, to get us to stop funding Ukraine. So yeah, we've got hostile states acting here. We've got just a lot of aggravation going on, and the introduction of AI generated material, which if it's good material and you enjoy it, I mean, I do see a lot of AI generated car images, which I'm fine with in my feed. Some of them are actually pretty cool and great looking vehicles, though they'll never exist in real life. But I don't care because I just think they're cool. I'd probably feel the same way if they were AI generated spaceships. And I've seen a couple AI generated Star Trek spaceships, which okay. I thought were pretty interesting as well. So not, at least from my perspective, not all of it's bad. But it's when these AI generated things start pretending like they're real things and causing people to make decisions about their own behavior based on false information that it becomes a problem. Then Facebook, instead of being this tool to help you connect with other people, becomes a tool to manipulate a population, and then you've got a problem. You've got smart propaganda. The good news is it doesn't have to be very smart yet. But the bad news is it certainly shows the potential to do a tremendous amount of damage, much like we saw social media doing damage to the elections in the 2016 and 2020 cycles. It looks like this 2024 cycle is going to have a lot of AI issues and certainly hostile state issues on social media.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, founder and principal analyst at The Enderle Group. Coming up next, a cruise company goes the extra step. Let me introduce the sports fans to Prize Picks. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with over 3 million active members. It's the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. On Prize Picks, it's just you against the numbers. All you do is pick more or less on 2-6 player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Here come the NBA and NHL playoffs, plus MLS soccer is underway, right? So maybe on a single entry, you choose LeBron James for more than 23 points, Connor McDavid for less than 3 assists, and Lionel Messi for more than 1 goal. You can now win up to 100 times your money. With as little as 4 correct picks, you can turn $10 into $1,000. Download the app today and use code DEAL for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code DEAL on PrizePicks for a deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Download the app and use code DEAL for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hey, glad you're with us. As part of its global fresh fish program, Holland America brings a wide range of seafood from port to plate within 48 hours across its cruise line fleet. How it works from Nathan Diller, consumer travel reporter at USA Today. Nathan, what did you do?
Yeah, so we got sort of a behind-the-scenes look at this fresh fish program that Holland America Line has. They have a wide range of fish that they can bring from the port to the plate in 48 hours. So that's sort of the promise on most regular cruises that you're going to be, if you're sampling this fresh fish, going to be eating it within a two-day window from when they got it to when it's being brought to you. So we get to see sort of the process from when they're loading it onto the ship in San Diego, from then sort of storing it and preparing it for dinner that same night. We had a mahi-mahi dish that they had just procured earlier that day and that had been caught just days earlier. And so you get to see sort of the process from beginning to end.
I sort of understand the commitment to that because I think, as you point out, there's a good majority of customers on cruise lines who are fish eaters or who prefer fish.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think it's something you think about when you go on a cruise, is certainly seafood. One executive I spoke to from Holland America said that at least 75% of Holland America passengers order fresh fish once, if not twice, per cruise. So they certainly have seen demand for it. And having that fresh fish, I think, is something that people might see and be more even inclined to order it then.
Yeah. The kinds of fish we might see from Holland America are what?
It's a really wide range. You know, they have a complete list on their website, so you can go there and see by region exactly what's available. It does vary by region, so you're not always going to have the same thing. Okay. But, for instance, in San Diego, they picked up mahi-mahi, rockfish, swordfish, rainbow trout, and sea bass. And those were the fish that they had for sort of the beginning of the voyage. And then they were going to pick up more at the next available port. And not every port has them, so that's another thing to keep in mind, that you're not going to be picking them up at every port, but they do source as much as they can locally in more than 60 ports around the world.
Wow. We're speaking with Nathan Diller, consumer travel reporter at USA Today. His piece is called Port to Plate in 48 Hours, How Holland America Line Brings Fresh Fish to Guests. What kind of quality checks do they do?
Well, so they have just announced these new certifications from the Marine Stewardship Council and then the Aquaculture Stewardship Council. So those certifications are sort of a stamp of approval that the fish that they are sourcing, both wild-caught fish and farmed fish, are sustainable and coming from responsible sources. And they have their own quality checks that they do. So they do, in order to get those certifications, there's a third-party audit that's done, and they make sure that the sourcing, in the case of the MSC from the fishery side, is sustainable and meets their criteria for sustainability. But also they have a chain of command certification that certifies that the fish that you are eating is the certified sustainable fish that they, you know, have certified on the front end. So making sure that through the whole process that it's meeting their criteria for sustainability, and sort of is just another way that Holland America, I think, is committed to making sure that process is sustainable. They have another certification in Alaska, so they serve only fresh seafood in Alaska on those voyages, and have just sort of doubled down on it. Wow. Across the broader range of destinations that they visit.
So if you're getting fresh fish instead of frozen, what about the cost? Does it change the price for a cruise?
Not as far as the consumer will see. So the fresh fish might cost the cruise line more, but the way they had kind of justified that was that they're cutting down on shipping costs, and so you don't have to worry about shipping containers from point A to point B, at least at the same scale. They are still serving some frozen fish, so they are still doing some shipping, but the cost of getting the frozen fish might be even, you know, more in terms of the shipping cost. So it sort of shakes out to where they can spend more money on the product, and then the consumer is not seeing any change in the menu price or the cruise fare as a result.
Thanks, Nathan. Nathan Diller, consumer travel reporter at USA Today. Coming up next, adults celebrating their half birthdays.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, glad you're with us. Half birthdays are the latest milestone, sort of, for adults. They're borrowing an idea more often associated with toddlers and instead throwing themed picnics, booking DJs, and planning vacations. It's a story by Dalvin Brown, personal finance reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Dalvin, what's happening?
So what's happening is adults are celebrating their birthday either twice a year, so once 6 months before their actual birthday and then on their actual birthday, or people are just deciding to move their birthday celebrations a whole 6 months later or 6 months earlier, and they're calling it their half birthdays. And people are spending just as much on their half birthday events as they are on their actual birthday celebrations.
What is it? What's behind this?
Yeah, so so there's a couple of reasons this is happening. One, there are people who've missed, during the pandemic, we missed all kinds of events, including birthday parties. So there's people who are kind of catching up with that. And then there's also just this idea that, there's no right and wrong time to sort of celebrate your life. And so people are using their half birthdays as kind of excuses to, do things that they've always wanted to do, but then they get other people to come along with them and celebrate along with them.
Boy, I mean, some of these companies are playing right along, right? I think American Greetings, which makes the greeting cards, they're in on this. Restaurants.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's one of the things that was really interesting about this. It's bigger than just like, a select couple of adults celebrating their half birthday. You have American Greetings launching half birthday cards and saying that more people are celebrating non-traditional or less occasional or less conventional holidays. You also have Etsy, which told me that, decorations for cards or decorations and gifts for half birthdays was up 57% compared to last year. An Etsy shop owner that I spoke to said that, she launched a half birthday card and it almost instantly became a bestseller. You have retailers, restaurants sending people freebies and discounts on their half birthday. So this is bigger than just like a couple of select adults, deciding to celebrate their birthday. You have companies and business owners saying that, business is picking up on these days too.
We're speaking with Dalvin Brown, personal finance reporter at the Wall Street Journal. The story is called Adults. Yes, adults are throwing half birthday parties. I don't want to profile too much. Is this more of a younger person's thing?
Yeah, what's interesting is I did speak to people of all ages, including some people who weren't quoted in my story, who were celebrating half birthdays. So I think this idea that, you can celebrate life beyond just your birthday extends through the ages. One of the things that I do see that I did notice is more specific to young adults, I think, is that there's the TikTokification of it and sharing it with your friends on social media, and having these events that are very picturesque and ready to be photographed and video, mm-hmm. Videoed is something that younger adults are doing.
Yeah, I got that sense. Like there's almost that blend here of not only are we celebrating half birthdays, but we're doing it more for the experience, right? It's not just dinner out. So like in some cases, they're going pretty big.
So one of the people that I spoke to was celebrating her, I think, 46th and a half birthday, or maybe it was 45th and a half birthday, with a trip with her daughter to Cancun. And so there was this whole luxury getaway for 6 days, complete with excursions and photo shoots. And I think it was, you know, it was all about the experience for sure. And her birth, her half birthday just kind of presented an opportunity for them to get away and celebrate that.
Thanks, Dalvin. Dalvin Brown, personal finance reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, a single mom in New York defies the odds.
What does the future of mobility in Michigan sound like? It's the sound of new EV charging stations at our state parks. Discover all the ways MEDC is driving next-gen mobility in Michigan at michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Well, we'll finish with this. A New York mom is going viral on social media for her emotional reaction after learning she passed the bar exam on her first try. In a TikTok video, Africa Oz is seen logging online to check her exam results with her brother standing behind her. Next to her are photos of her 4-year-old son and late mother and grandmother. After reading her result, the 30-year-old Oz yells out in excitement before jumping up and then bursting into tears.
I passed! Nice. I passed!
Oz told Good Morning America she's wanted to be a lawyer since she was young when she watched her late mother advocate for their community in Harlem. But when Oz was 17, she was arrested and charged as part of a gang-related conspiracy case. The New York Times says she later pleaded guilty to felony charges of conspiracy and weapons possession and spent 6 months in Rikers Island prison. Now, she's a lawyer. That'll do it for this hour. For Nicole Murray, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.